balls are just for Ghostbusters, okay?
How's everybody doing?
Good. Hello.
Yeah, so this week, since it's our second episode, we have some follow-up from last week. So last week I said that Apple doesn't store your health data in the cloud when we were talking about the Apple Watch, and that was just wrong. I'm going to link to a support doc in the show notes, but Apple does store your health data in iCloud. You can turn it off, but by default, I believe it does, and it's end-to-end encrypted, so it is secure, but if you turn on iCloud backups, then your iCloud backups will contain your health data, and when you do an iCloud backup, Apple keeps a key, the end-to-end encryption key. They keep it on their server, so they could just use the key to decrypt it, like for police purposes and what have you. So I was wrong about that, and I wanted to set that straight so that people didn't assume that that was the case.
Thanks for clearing that up, man.
Yep. Let's see. Another follow-up we have is last week we talked about Intel and their new CEO, and I think we touched on some of the struggles that they've had to compete with ARM recently in the last few years and mobile phones. So there's a article from Ben Thompson of Stratechery. He's a tech analyst that's worked for Apple, Microsoft, and I think WordPress as well. But yesterday, I believe it was, he came out with an article talking about Intel's problems. And it's a really good article, and I just wanted to link to it so that people could read it if they wanted to. But he expands upon what we talked about in our discussion, and specifically like problems that Intel faces and some of his like possible solutions for those problems.
Interesting. Yeah, I haven't read the article yet. Definitely need to catch up on that.
Yeah, it's pretty long. But if you are a subscriber, he actually takes each one of his articles and makes them a podcast. So I just listen to them every day instead of sitting there and reading them for like 15 minutes, because they are in-depth and very, very good articles. But yeah.
Cool. So you got some updates on some new chips too for the iPhone?
Yeah, so I think the last of our follow-up today is 9to5Mac had a report the other day that TSMC, Taiwan Semiconductor, is actually set to do risk production for their 3-nanometer chips. And what risk production is it's a stage in which the foundry has carried out like internal testing, and they're now ready to try it on like customer designs and see if they can produce those at scale. It's kind of like the initial beta release, I guess, if you want to put it that way, of chip production. And then so they think they'll be ready at volume for the second half of 2022 for 3-nanometer chips.
What's the, because they always talk like at volume and like it takes so long. What's that number, right? Like, what do they consider volume?
The article didn't say, but I'm assuming that they mean, when they say at volume, they mean, oh, we can put these in an iPhone.
Right, without like a ton of delays and be able to meet demand. And
yeah.
So it's probably not like an actual number.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they have some kind of milestone number, but I don't know if they said it publicly.
Right, yeah. Yeah, because I was, similarly, when, you know, Intel said that they had to push back their chips, it's like, really? Like, it takes like a whole year extra? Like, what's that number? That's what's always interesting to me, because, yeah, a lot of that data isn't public, which I get, because, you know, that could probably be used for some different, like, not espionage, but like competitive things, and maybe, you know, stock market.
Yeah, trying to land a launch before someone else kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I get it, but it's still a little interesting when you see those dates get pushed and it's like, well, really, do you need to have that many or whatever?
Yeah, I don't think risk production is exactly this, but if you, you know how like whenever you buy a CPU, they'll like you can get the 8-core or the 6-core.
Right.
Well, a lot of times that's just binning. So what binning is the they try to make, let's say, an 8-core chip, and then they have a certain percentage of those chips that fail inspection, and all 8 of those cores aren't perfect. So what they do is they release a 6-core version because they do have 6 good cores, right?
Right.
And so they'll release those at a cheaper price because they're, you know, lesser chips. But that way they don't eat cost. And so I think risk production is kind of like maybe the initial stages of that.
Okay.
Where there's probably going to be a high level of failure. A good example of that is the new M1 MacBook Airs. They actually came out with, when they released it, there is the base level version actually has 7 GPU cores, and for like $50 more, you can buy the one with 8 GPU cores, and they just sold both of them because otherwise, you know, that those chips didn't meet the specs, right? So they had to bin them out and make them, you know, cheaper.
Oh, that's good. I did not know that. Thank you. Very educational today.
Yeah, I've never heard of that. That's pretty cool.
No, yeah. So I believe that's it for follow-up, unless we have anything else.
Yep.
Good here.
Yeah, so everyone probably saw that CES was last week, virtual, which was interesting. Kind of nice to be able to just, you know, hop into YouTube and watch things. I usually watch all the like recap videos anyway, because who has the time really to watch these things live? And a lot of times it's like, you know, an hour and a half keynote from a company, and they, and you have maybe 10 minutes of actual like, hey, that's cool product kind of thing. But yeah, so I saw a few things that came out, and one thing I wanted to talk about was TCL. They had some pretty cool announcements around some new devices, like some cell phones with 5G. But the really cool thing that I was excited about is their new series of TVs. They're actually doing a couple cool things. One is the new XL series. So TCL is finally making a TV that is 85 inches. And the 4 series, which is kind of like the lower end one, is going to be only $1,599. So $1,600 for an 85-inch television. 4K, you know, beautiful, massive display. At that price is just insane, I think.
Is that like OLED, QLED?
So these are just the regular LED. So the lower end, you don't get like the quantum dots. You don't get the mini LEDs. You just get the standard LED stuff at that level. But when you go up to the new 6 series, this is where it gets really interesting. They're actually transitioning those to 8K this year. So their current 6 series, which I actually have one of this, the 4K 6 series, they're moving those to 8K and adding in 120 hertz panel, which that's one thing that I was, you know, kind of miffed about with mine, was it's only a 60 hertz panel. So they're upgrading the panel. They're getting 8K, and they're also adding in new mini LED technology that they've developed, where there's 0 millimeters in between the LEDs and the display layer, and so it's able to make it a lot thinner, which is cool.
So that's actually really interesting that you mentioned the mini LED, because granted, this is all just rumor, speculation, stuff like that, but they say that TCL is making the screen for the new Nintendo Switch Pros, and they're saying that it is going to be that mini LED.
See, that would be cool, because I did hear that to compete, right, like TCL kind of got to that mini LED seemingly before a lot of other brands like Samsung, and they're all trying to play catch up. And so now, like, it's insane that TCL is already like improving their development of mini LED. And if they can get that down to that, you know, even thinner, it would make sense they would do something with like a console, like a handheld type thing. That would be great.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting to see where they go with it. I'm one of those few that was, I'm like a Samsung LG baby, to tell you the truth. But I do appreciate some of the things that I've seen from Tickle.
Tickle, yeah.
Stole it from you, Ryan.
Yeah, that's what I call it. Yeah, so, I mean, just based off of what you both have said, it sounds like mini LED is going to have a big year, because we'll get to this later, but Apple is going to start, or is rumored to start, using mini LED in a lot of their products this year.
Yeah, I think it just improves a lot of things. So, like, for instance, you can then also add in the quantum dot layer that TCL does and still achieve that really thin panel that they've been able to do, and continually, you know, get that smaller without going to the price of like an OLED, right? So that's what's cool. And the other nice thing about the mini LEDs is you can get more of the dimming zones and a lot more precise contrast control around the actual image. And they also said another really neat thing about them reducing that gap is it reduces the haloing around the bright images, which has been kind of an issue with, you know, some of the more like mid-range panels. You'll get a lot of that halo effect on brighter images. So, but yeah, I mean, like I said, I own one of the TCL 6 series. It's been a phenomenal TV so far. I've had it less than a year, but great TV. And so I'm excited to see what they continue to do. I feel like they're becoming what Vizio was a few years back, where they're like the mid or entry level TV, but just like the quality that they've been able to put out at that price is amazing.
Yeah, they're a really good value. And I would agree with you. They seem like their Vizio was about like 10 years ago, I guess.
Yeah.
Adam, I'm seeing something else CES related. I guess we're going to do a CES show today. Cadillac is making a taxi that flies. What is that?
Yeah. So this, first off, I just want to go ahead and say, like, with the CES, you're talking about, Ryan, with everything being virtual and stuff. I think I kind of like it better this way. You know, like even Nintendo doing the Nintendo Directs instead of actually showing up to E3 and a lot of those conferences, I feel like those are actually a little bit more intimate and they're better prepared.
I completely missed CES this year. Like, I thought it was just starting and it was over.
Yeah, I feel like there wasn't as much hype around it for some reason, right? Like, there wasn't as much...
COVID?
I mean, yeah, okay, some reason, yes, COVID. That's not what I mean. I mean, like, typically, like, you'll see advertising and you'll see it plastered everywhere. It felt like that wasn't there this time, and that, which might have been a missed opportunity, because like you're saying, Adam, like I enjoyed it better because I could just drop in whenever I wanted to for the things that, you know, I cared about.
It was really quiet. I'll say that too. That was one of the things. I actually forgot CES was going on as well.
Yeah.
So GM's got their new, I think they're calling them EVTOL. I don't know if they're just saying EVTOLs, but I'm not exactly, I got to look at what it stands for, but they're not the only ones that are doing that acronym. So I need to figure out what that means. However, it's a new air taxi that's going to be ran on battery that looks like it's straight out of RoboCop from their concept art. Obviously, that's probably going to change, but this thing supposedly gets up to like 56 miles per hour.
How many people are supposed to fit in this thing?
It looks like it's a single.
Okay. I just looked it up. eVTOL is a all-electric and hybrid electric powered vehicle takeoff and landing aircraft. So that's what the VTOL is.
Okay. That makes sense, because they're not the only ones that are playing around in this space. but I guess they're the ones that kind of brought something to the CES.
Yeah, looking at this, okay, so if it's a single seater, in order to use, like, is it going to be totally autonomous? Is that the deal? Where you just, like, you know, scan your phone and then hop in and it magically takes you somewhere?
You know, I was thinking about some of that stuff the other day, actually, because I skimmed into it and I hopped out and I was like, you know, they have to take into consideration weight and things of that nature. So I wonder if there's like a scale you got to find and stand on it real quick to make sure that you and the things you're taking are going to hit that weight requirement. And
well, I would assume they would just do it like a truck or anything else. They just put a weight limit on it and you have to be smart enough not to do that.
Yeah, it's just that if you try to game the system like this, you die, right? Like, you fall out of the sky.
Or you could hurt someone else, you know? That's falling out of the sky onto somebody or something.
You're not going to get off the ground, though.
Oh, that's true. I guess it could have a safety feature as well.
Well, I mean, not even that. Like, you're just going to, like, hop, skip into a tree. I mean, it's just like... if you overload a truck and you get on the interstate... you know, that if you put too much weight into the bed of that truck, well, your axle could break, your shocks could go out, your tires could just pop, and then you're going to have a bad accident and you might hurt somebody too.
Yeah, I'm also thinking none of us would be qualified to operate this thing. So
speak for yourself. I play a lot of flight simulator.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I haven't played in a while, right? And I know that the details on this thing are scarce, as they typically are, because it probably won't ever actually get made. That's, you know, they've been promising us flying cars for like 50 years. And so I'm not like holding my breath. But it's interesting to see, okay, if this is something where, let's say I need to go across town for some reason. That I could see that in, you know, distant future being a thing. But again, how are they going to, you know, ensure that A, it's safe, B, that it's actually going to be, you know, autonomous to where you don't have to know how to fly the thing or you don't need someone in there with you?
Yeah, I'm thinking it's actually going to be you're not flying it or driving it at all. It's you get your, you know, butt in there and it says, okay, I'm taking you where you want to go. But I was thinking on the weight thing, it wasn't so much of the turbine of, you know, being able to lift your ass up off the ground as much as it is there's not enough battery power to, you know, keep you going for that distance.
Well, I'm looking at the article here. Automaker on Tuesday revealed renderings and animations of Cadillac-branded personal aircraft powered by batteries. It's not coming out.
Yeah, I think and GM, I feel like, was the only real automaker last week showing anything off, and it was more that this was going along with their theme of electric vehicles and like looking at towards the future to see, okay, we're going to be all in on electric, we're going to develop batteries, whether that's in-house or with other companies, and these are some of the potential applications for those things. Not necessarily, hey, we're going to pivot part of our, you know, we're going to create this whole new division of you know, autonomous vehicles for cities or something like that. Didn't feel like that to me. It felt more like you're saying concept.
This is just another bullet point on the grand tradition of companies showing products that don't exist off at CES and never will exist.
Yeah.
It is interesting, though.
Now, as I say, I've seen other companies. Remember Uber was talking about some of these like helicopter, like autonomous things back when that they were looking at. So it seems like there are companies legitimately looking at these things. But again, you're going to be wealthy if you're going to be doing this. It's not going to be for everyday people where you get a little token. It's not like riding the subway or something.
Maybe. You never know. The future could change. But, I mean, I even thought the... granted, it was just a concept and it was a one-time vehicle, but that James Cameron car, I think it was with Mercedes, they did for Avatar. Amazing. That car was absolutely awesome. But
was it in the movie?
No, he just did this freestyle car and it's awesome. I mean, if you get a moment to check it out, it's cool as hell.
Yeah, I'll I'll have to put a link in the show notes. So speaking of the future, when you promise the future and you don't deliver, tell us what happens, Ryan.
Yeah. So the company June, I'm sure many people have heard of their smart oven that they launched. Gosh, it's got to have been, what, 5 years or so ago?
Has it been that long?
Maybe, maybe not. I feel like it was a Kickstarter, maybe?
Was it a Kickstarter?
It might have been. I remember when it when people started getting them to test, like 2 years ago, some of the, like, Twit, if This Week in Tech guys, like, they had one that they were testing. I think it was about 2 or 3 years ago. And I remember even then, like, this is just a waste of money. Like, yeah, the idea of it was, you know, you put in your food and you set exactly what it is and it automatically keeps temperature and does all this thing. And, you know, we'll ring your phone, send you a notification when, you know, it's ready. And but I don't know. It just seemed like, why can't I just set a timer? It's a lot. Like, why do I need to spend thousands of dollars on this little, you know, toaster oven because it's got a friggin' camera in it and can ping me, you know?
Right. Well, I think if it came out this year, it would have used machine learning algorithms to detect what food you have in the oven and you wouldn't have to set the timer.
Yeah. I mean, they've been promising that kind of thing for refrigerators and stuff forever, and it's just not taking off, right? Because people can open the door and say, I need milk. They don't need a dang computer to say, hey, you're out of milk, man. Sorry. Rant.
Well, I don't, there are some things, like, in the kitchen that I'll say that I wish there was some sort of inventory set for me that was just simple, not like I got to go out of my way to put all this stuff together. But, like, I know for seasonings or just things like that, if I'm wanting to put together a specific meal, it would be nice to know, like, okay, I need to get more of this.
Yeah, and I could see more of an automated, like, list generation would be really cool for me. Because, like you said, I'm out of a seasoning. Dang it. Like, I wanted to make this meal. It'd be nice to know beforehand so I can order it.
It would be nice if you had your inventory, and based off your inventory, because we all have those moments where we're like, man, I don't know what to eat tonight. If it just looked at your inventory and said, hey, based off what you have, all your seasonings or things, you can make this meal tonight.
Yeah, which I've used. There's a few services online where you can type in, you know, simple ingredients that you have, and it'll spit out a link to a recipe, which is nice. So, yeah, totally, totally cool. I could see that happening. But back to June, which, yeah, they promised this new future of cooking, but I think the cost versus and the timing and just seemed like it was just wrong. Didn't really go well. So the company Weber, which we all know Weber for their just amazing, timeless grills, purchased them. But the big thing that they really purchased them for is their software. And so they've been actually working with June for the last 3 years on a software platform for a lot of their smart grills and smart technology that they're starting to build in to some of their products in the grilling space. So it's the big thing that they're touting this for is, hey, now we have this in-house, you know, custom tailored to our grill applications. We now have this software team coming from June with their expertise to then really push forward like the smart grilling space, I guess. So yeah, it's going to start off simple, right? Like some apps and very simple things built into some of their grills. But I could see this actually being, you know, pretty cool. I think if they strip it down and use it for, you know, more basic things at first, I think it'll get a bigger and broader adoption.
Yeah, see, and I have a question on that too, actually. Let me start with that. Do you do any type of, like, grill smoking or anything like that?
I do, and I'm old school. I use actual chunk wood. I don't do, like, the pellets. So that's another thing, too. I was going to – I'd want to get into, like, the – I'm an old curmudgeon about it. That's where, like, for me, this is cool because maybe there's an entry level where I'm just buying sensors for temperature, right? And using their applications that they've built. So if someone like me, it seems like they're going to have different levels of engagement.
Yeah. So, I mean, that you and I are going to have to talk a little bit more, because that's something I've been entering a space on a lot. And to me, for someone being a novice at doing a lot of the smoked of like the barbecue stuff, wings and, you know, pork butts, things that's going to sit in there like all day. I have a pellet fed auto regulated grill. And to me, that is like the lifesaver. I mean, I could set it in there and set it at my temperature. I'll see you in 3 hours. Don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, that's one nice thing about the pellets. I just wanted a challenge when I started. And I also just like the actual just the pomp and circumstance, I guess you could say, around it.
The ceremony of it.
That's it. The ceremony. The ceremonial, lighting of the wood.
I gave my challenge baby to Ryan, which was my charcoal grill was a ripoff of the Green Egg.
Oh, there you go.
It is nestled safely in my storage unit.
Well, you can enjoy that one, because I never could regulate the heat right on that damn thing. I tried so many times, I just couldn't. So when I got the pellet feeder, I was like, this is amazing.
I do like the pellet feeders because of the consistency. I'll give it that.
Would you have, Ryan?
Yeah, so Ninja Theory, they are a game developer who, Adam, what games are they known for?
One of the ones that I really like is Ninja Gaiden.
Okay, yeah, I thought it was Ninja Gaiden, but I wasn't sure. Yeah, so Ninja Theory has a game. I don't know if the title is officially going to be this, but it's Project Mara. And what was really cool about this is it is set in a photorealistic apartment. So they came out with a dev diary the other day to kind of show off their tech and what they're doing to make this game. So it's a horror game, and it's based entirely in one location, in an apartment. And the apartment is a real apartment with real furniture. And what they did is they had a company come in and use LiDAR scanners to scan the entire apartment to get like extremely accurate dimensions for all of the rooms and all the furniture and the lights and everything in the apartment. And then to get the detail even more, they took material that was in the apartment, whether it be like a rug or, a coaster, different things like that. And they scanned those materials, and they used those scans to make shaders for each of those unique materials that are in that apartment. And then to top it all off, they used procedural generation techniques to create dust in the apartment, like dust and hair on the floor.
Wow.
And I even think that I saw some screenshots of the kitchen sink in like pools of water, when you wash your hands, how like sometimes when you go to shut off the water, you get like a little bit of water that goes down by the handle. They had like different variations of that would show up, or that were in the basin of the sink. And the total effect is it looks 100% real. Like I cannot distinguish, if anything, I cannot distinguish between what they have made and actual photos of the apartment. And with a side to side between the two photos, the one that they made actually looks more realistic, because you can see like hair and stuff in it and dust.
Wow.
So yeah, it's supposed to be a horror game. I think they described it, I believe, as like a mental horror game, with only, I think, one character. So I think you might be like stuck in your own mind and like going crazy. But the apartment is just amazing looking. So if anybody is at all interested in in video games or video game graphics, like, you should really check out this tech video because it is really cool.
See, I think it's really neat, the whole, you know, getting confused between what's the real and what's the graphics. I love that things are getting to that level. But I do want to correct something real fast. The Ninja Theory studio, I had mixed up with a different studio. They are not the ones who made Ninja Gaiden, from my understanding. They're the ones who did DMC, Devil May Cry, the kind of like the reboot. And then they jumped into that really popular Hellblade game. And I think they're behind different other types of games, but still a really good one.
Yeah, this looks really cool to me, too. I remember just the promise of this tech, you know, gosh, even 20 plus years ago. Remember those companies that did those? It was basically a video, and it was a game. There was a few of those that like had come out, and it was grainy, right? Like HD wasn't around.
Like Night Watch.
Yeah, you know, you could see where things could go potentially, but the fact that now, and this is in engine rendering at this photorealistic level, that's just incredible. I'm really excited about this, too. It's so many places that this could go. And of course, they choose a horror game, right? Like, to really make it more immersive. So I'll probably never play this because I get too scared and I'll have nightmares.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks really cool.
All right, so let's hear about some of the latest Mac rumors, Ryan.
Yes, I am very excited because Bloomberg and Ming-Chi Kuo came out with two huge Mac rumors for this coming year. For those who don't know, Ming-Chi Kuo is an analyst in the supply chain. And so he's always extremely accurate in his rumors. And then Bloomberg is Bloomberg Apple rumors are pretty much led by Mark Gurman. And he's like, he shoots about 95%. Like, he's never wrong either. So these are pretty solid, solid rumors. So I think I'm actually going to start with the laptops because that's what I'm least excited about and save the best for last. So they came out with Ming-Chi Kuo came out with the laptop rumors of for the upcoming MacBook Pros. They're supposed to change the size and add a 14-inch along with the existing 16-inch, which just got a redesign last year, I believe. And so both of those are going to be on Apple Silicon chips. And here's what is the really interesting part about the laptops is they seem to be saying, you know, forget about all the things we've done for the last 5 years. Let's go back to the way things were in 2015. So they're removing the touch bar. The touch bar is going to be gone. It's going to be dead. They released that in 2016. MagSafe is back on the laptops. So, and it's supposed to be like the OG MagSafe, where it's just a plug that attaches magnetically, not like the new MagSafe discs and all that stuff that is on the phones. It's the Mac-specific MagSafe. That's going to be back. They're supposed to have more ports, and the quote was, most users will not need to purchase additional dongles. So they don't, he doesn't specify exactly what type of ports they are, but the fact that he says most users will not need to purchase additional dongles seems to indicate that maybe they'll put the SD card slot back in, put a USB-A port on the computer instead of all USB-C Thunderbolt 4s. And then the design is going to change slightly, where it's going to resemble this year's iPhone and iPad designs, where they have the squared off edges.
Okay, so a few things. First of all, MagSafe charging. Thank goodness that's coming back. I have knocked over my computer way too many times hitting the plug. And when that first came out, I was like, this is, charge me whatever you want. This is revolutionary. Take my money kind of thing. So that's really cool. The touch bar, I mean, I don't use my touch bar, I'll be honest, unless it's like the volume button that I'm hitting. So I get that. Probably similarly that people just aren't using it, I'm assuming. Did they say like the detail of why?
It didn't really say, but I mean, you have to think that Apple hasn't done any kind of revisions on it since it came out in 2016. They've put no additional effort in it in software or in any kind of changes in the hardware, really. Most of the people that I've heard either don't care, which I'm kind of right there. Like, I don't really care. I have used it a little bit on work machines. And then the people that hate it vocally hate it, especially when they initially came out and they took away the escape key, which is the autocomplete key for code completion in Xcode. And so you had to hit the touch bar to get that code completion. It was just a big issue.
Yeah, that's goofy.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's basically the... their expected third quarter of 2021. So a lot of people are thinking that's probably June, because I believe that Apple's quarters don't line up to the normal, like, January's beginning of quarter one.
Oh, plus isn't WWDC in June typically? Yeah, that makes sense.
Right, yeah, so they'll show off their developing machines then. It's not really known whether or not they're going to be M1 machines, but it would be assumed that they would be, if they are marketed as M1 machines, that they'll be more powerful variants. So... yeah, so that's the laptops, but what I'm very, very, very excited about is the Bloomberg report that had three different little bits of information. So first off is the iMac redesign. This is the first time they have done a significant redesign on the iMac in, gosh, since maybe more than a half a decade ago.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
It's been a very long time. So they're going to slim the bezels down. It's not going to have the big silver chin on it anymore. It's going to have a flat back. It won't have a convex back like the current one does. And it's supposedly going to be similar in design as Apple's XDR monitor, which is their $6,000 monitor with a $1,000 stand that's their professional monitor. So it's supposed to look similar in design to that. No mention here of any kind of touch displays across any of these rumors, which some people are for touch on Mac, some people are against. I lean kind of pro adding touch to the Mac line, especially it would be very cool to have a Surface Studio type iMac that could like lean down into a drawing ergonomic. What is it called?
I'll go ahead and agree with you. That's one of the things that the unit I have, it does not have a touch screen. And I know for me, using it for various different things, having a touch screen sometimes would be extremely nice.
Yeah. Yeah. What I would really love to see is an iMac that would come down into like a Wacom tablet pen display type of orientation. And even if it didn't have like multi-touch with your finger, at least pen support for like the Apple Pencil 2 would be amazing, because then you wouldn't have to have an external. I have an external pen tablet display. I know Adam and I have talked about this before. And if it was just built in and it was Apple's quality, it would be so much better. There wouldn't be any lag, because there's still a slight bit of lag in those pen displays. And so that's something I would love to see. That's not in the rumors, but that's something that I'd love to see.
Yeah, I think for me, like, you'd almost have to do that whatever we're calling it, the lay down type display.
There's a word for that.
I know, and I just can't think about it, and just words today. But yeah, for me, like, you would almost have to for it to feel natural, because, you know, putting your hand up and trying to write on a monitor doesn't feel, and that's what Steve Jobs always said, right? Like, it just doesn't feel right to be touching a laptop like that or a display like that. So yeah, I, when the Surface came out with that, I was like, that's pretty cool, especially, you know, Photoshop and different things with the connective tool, that the dial or whatever, that would be cool to see go towards Apple product level of, you know, engineering. That would be really cool.
Yeah. So that's the iMac redesign, and barring any kind of tablet or pen support, I'll probably be skipping that. But what I'm truly excited about is there's rumors for new Mac Pros, and there's two different versions. So version one is the same design that they came out with last year, I believe. Yeah, last year, the new iMac Pros that you can spec all the way up to $55,000 with Intel Xeon chips in them. They're insane. Same design, but possibly updated Intel chips. Just keep everything the same. And then I guess there's also a possibility that they could have some form of Apple Silicon. But I think what they're doing is they're going to update, but leave that current MacBook Pro around for the extremely high-end, like, TV production crews and movie makers that need that insane, like, Intel workflow and can just expense $40,000 on a computer. But version two is what I'm super excited about, and this version is supposed to be half the size of the current Mac Pro, mostly aluminum exterior. Will of course be a Apple Silicon chip. They don't say, you know, obviously it would be some kind of variant, a more powerful variant of the current M1s, or maybe an M2, whatever they decide to call it. And the design is said to invoke nostalgia for the G4 Cube, which is like my favorite computer that I never had, even though it was a spectacular failure in the marketplace because it overheated and cracked and turned itself off all the time. But it looked cool.
Yeah, I could get behind the smaller Cube for sure. I always wanted one of those, never did get one. Those are always really cool. So, and I haven't, like, man, I would love to get like a really nice Mac Pro, but you're saying you could spec that sucker out and be spending, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. Like, that's just not going to happen for me. I can't just expense that.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, it's not something you need, right? You don't need to spend that much money. They didn't say anything about price in the article, of course, because nobody knows price. But what I'm hoping is that they have the current version one, is what I'm calling it, which is the existing design, and they just keep updating it with Intel chips to do those things that they need, that certain people need, and they keep it out there to keep those people happy. And then with the second version, I'm hoping that it goes back to the high but not unreasonable prices of the trash can Mac Pro, you know, like $3,000-$4,000, something like that. I would be so down for that. Now, what I don't, because right now I use a Mac Mini as my like machine, my desktop machine for all my work, everything that I do. And I would love to have something that is, you know, maybe a little bit bigger than that, but is incredibly more powerful. Then the question is if this version two of this Mac Pro goes back to the trash can Mac, where it's not really that upgradable, or if they keep the same, they keep the same design, like they keep the same functionality of the current, the redesigned Mac Pro that's already out, where it is user upgradable. You can add more RAM, you can add more memory if you need it. You could add the special cards that Apple has. I can't remember what they're called right now. So that would be like the best of both worlds. And so I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, that'd be cool to see how that develops, see what actually comes out. I know a lot of times they're pretty spot on, though, like Bloomberg and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we might see some sort of slight variation on these rumors, but, I mean, these products, unless something terrible happens, they're more than likely to come out. And then the last thing is they, from the Bloomberg article, is that Apple is finally going to come out with a consumer-level monitor again. They killed their consumer-level monitors, I think, back in 2013 and said they were getting out of the monitor business, partnered with LG, and came out with the LG Ultrafine that a lot of prominent podcasters do not like because it's overpriced and it doesn't match the Apple styling. So like, what are you paying for at that point? But this new monitor is supposed to be lower priced than the XDR, which I would hope, because the XDR is $6,000, is a consumer-level display and does not have the same brightness and contrast as the XDR, because the XDR is a reference-level monitor, again, for those people that can spend $7,000 on a monitor.
Yeah, it's a movie production studio, right? Like, who's buying a bunch of those?
Right, exactly. Yeah. So it'll just be nice for Apple to have a monitor again that normal people can buy, and they can hook it up to their Mac Minis like I have, or they can hook it up to their new Apple Silicon half-size Mac Pro, or they can use it as a secondary monitor on their iMac or their new laptops. It's really a good time to be a fan of Mac, because of Macintosh computers, because they are seemingly doing all the things that people have wanted them to do for years, and they just haven't invested in the Mac over the last 5 years.
See, and that'll probably make a lot of different studios happy, because I've worked in a couple of various graphic design studios, whether it was graphic design for video, videography, things of that nature. And they were holding on to old Macs just because the color variations and stuff would really match up correctly with what they were actually outputting. So I'm sure that if they're getting back into that space, it's going to make a lot of people happy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've heard reports of production companies, like television production companies. When Apple came out with the Trashcan Mac Pro, they kept their old Intel cheese grater Macs that were user upgradable, because they could do things with those that they couldn't do with the Trashcan Mac Pro. And they were still using those same machines that are like 15 years old. I think they were using like 2005 Mac Pros. They were still using them until last year when the new Mac Pro came out. So that is, that is definitely a thing.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends who either do, videography work or own their own companies that do it. And some of them went totally the opposite direction when a lot of those changes happened and went back to Windows with like Adobe Premiere and, a lot of those types of like alternatives to Final Cut and stuff, because the changes that they saw with Apple and the cost, right? Like, it was just insane to get into their pro level again. So, yeah, I'm excited too to see them kind of shift focus back onto it. I know that they're still developing for mobile, which has been like their really deep focus for a while. And so it seems like now with bringing Apple Silicon, like it seems like they're going to be able to, focus more holistically, which will be nice.
Yeah, Yeah. It's an exciting time. So speaking of exciting things, Adam, what's this arcade cabinet in here? I know you're a big fan of arcade cabinets.
I am a really big fan of arcade cabinets, and I'm going to open this part with a question for you two. When you were both kids, did you ever go to any arcades?
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah, I went to the mall.
When you were a kid and you went to these arcades, did you ever have a specific one that you always just loved to go and play? A specific arcade game?
Oh, I mean, off the top of my head, X-Men was a good one. We used to play that one at the movie theater because they had like a little small arcade in the movie theater. So when our parents would drop us off, we would play those games for like 15, 20 minutes before we could go get seated in the theater. But yeah, so probably X-Men. And then if I had to pick another one, I would probably say Galaga. I love Galaga. It's like my game.
Galaga was definitely up there for me too. Ninja Turtles, though, I think was my, like, I'm running in, getting right to that machine. That was just so much fun.
Yeah, all those four-player machines were super fun. Ninja Turtles.
Yes, exactly. Yep. Yeah, me and my cousin would go, and so we would just sit there forever and just do it. It was so great.
Yeah, Ninja Turtles, X-Men, and I feel like there was another one too that I can't think of.
See, and that's what, when you say like I'm big into arcade machines, that right there, they're the legacy memories of going like, hey, my cousin, like you just said.
Yeah, the nostalgia of it.
And it's the same thing with like the retro consoles. That's why I mentioned I love the Nintendo 64, right? So it's funny because for me, it was always, there was this laser tag place in Georgia that I used to always go to, and they had a really nice, Killer Instinct cabinet, and it was KI2, and I loved it. Every time I went, I was always dumping money into it to play Killer Instinct. That was just my go-to, and my secondary was Battletoads.
Oh, Battletoads, yes.
Yeah, Battletoads.
Yeah, I remember Battletoads, yeah.
So, it's super funny, actually, because there's so much coincidence to it. I think it's hilarious. You're sitting here saying X-Men. Well, Arcade 1-Up is a business that recreates a lot of these old cabinets. They try to put the same style as far as graphic art and things of that nature, but they give it a little bit more flair where it's obviously some of them are updated. They got better button features, the light-up marquees there, and then they're sprinkled with some extra games inside of a cabinet. So you're not just buying one game in a cabinet. They actually have an X-Men cabinet that they've announced that's the four-player, and it's got a couple extra ones, and it looks great.
Dude.
Are you going to get it? Because I don't think it's going to fit in my office.
I am most definitely going to pre-order it, but what actually really got me is that they are coming out with a Killer Instinct cabinet that has KI 1 and 2 with freaking Battletoads.
Oh, okay.
Oh, man. It's the Adam cabinet.
Yeah, I was like, how could you hit that any closer to the freaking nail on me? Like, that's like right on it. I was extremely ecstatic over it.
What kind of pricing are on these newer ones?
I think they're hitting the $550 mark right now for the new ones. I've paid various underneath that. I have handful of the Ninja Turtle cabinet was a go-to for me. I had to get that. But I love a lot of their cabinets. They're coming out with new ones again because they're putting like they didn't have the coin slots on the front. Of course, they're not actual functional coin slots, but they didn't exist before, and now they're putting them on them. They had Dragon's Lair as well. I was never a big fan of the Dragon's Lair and Space Ace games.
Right. Yeah.
But they do have those two are coming out. They have a Pong four player table, which I'm actually kind of interested in. It's a tall like podium, basically circular with the screen in the middle and four dials.
Yeah, I saw that one, and some of the other games that are on there too look cool, like Breakout, that kind of stuff. That would be fun for like a common area, right? Like a area for the family to gather around and do some nostalgic gaming, and that'd be really neat.
Yeah, you should, after the pandemic, you should come to Adam's basement.
Well, yeah, obviously.
It's exactly what you're talking about.
It sounds like you basically turned your basement into like the rich kid's house that everyone had, like that friend who had money. And then, like, they had the, you know, air hockey, maybe a pool table, maybe a pinball machine, like if their dad was cool.
Well, let me put it this way. I didn't have a lot of these toys when I was a kid, right? So I'm an adult, and what do you do when you're an adult?
Now you can afford them. You're like, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, and you got kids, so you want to give them that.
The only thing that I don't love about these arcade one-up machines is that they, and now correct me if I'm wrong, but they are smaller than the original machine. So, like, if you get a four-player machine, you are like, you got to like wrap arms with each other in order to play it.
It is a tight fit. It is not a full-size set. That is for sure. But this is more just trying to, how are you going to fit it in your house, right? You start getting, because a lot of people don't buy just one, unfortunately.
People named Adam.
Say, yeah, people or you.
They also got into the virtual pinball space.
Oh, yeah. You were pretty pumped about that.
Yes, because they have a Star Wars pinball. This isn't a new announcement. This is just if you're interested, go check out Arcade 1-Up. But they've got a Star Wars pinball set. They've got a Attack on Mars, I think, is one of them's come in. And they have a Marvel pinball cabinet. And I definitely want to get the Star Wars one. That's a hands down.
I think I played the one that's based on, maybe, back in the day. I know that I used to play a Star Wars pinball machine.
Yeah, I think they're the FX boards, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong. Or the Zen ones.
Okay.
So I want to like pinball, but I suck at it. So I hate playing it, like, at an arcade. Like, last year, right before the pandemic, Adam and I and our families and everybody went, families and friend went to a, what would you call it? It's like a new arcade. It's like,
it's an arcade.
It's an arcade, but it's an arcade because to appeal to the people that miss the arcades, right? It's like a,
it's a retro arcade, to be specific. It's all the old nostalgic games.
Yeah.
Right. And they had a wall of like pinball machines, and I played a couple of them, but after like 2 seconds, I was like, oh, lost my money.
Which is kind of sad because they've got like 30 of them.
Right. Yeah. They have a bunch, but I never got huge in, I didn't get as much into pinball when I was a kid as I did with the arcade machines.
I would agree with that too.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah. So I did see one announcement. One thing that I saw that the 1-Up is coming up with is the, like a tabletop game as well for like board games. So to me, like, I love the arcade stuff. I think that's really cool. And I will, like, I want to get a few of these. So, you know, it's just more of like priorities as far as gaming goes. So to me,
wife.
Well, yeah, exactly. So because I have younger kids, they can't really play arcade games. For one, they can't reach them unless you do like the like, you know, cabinet that just sits on the table or something. But this new thing that it was a Kickstarter, and that I think it got fully funded, and they're doing all that stuff to actually get it released. But they're partnering with Hasbro on the first set. So like Monopoly, like a bunch of the Hasbro games, but like a digital board that, you know, you can sit around and play. That to me, like, especially because of the age of my kids, that is a winner.
Well, I'll tell you this. My kids are, they're slightly older than yours. Not too much, but they play the crap out of a lot of these cabinets. And it's really funny because if you look at the pictures of the cabinets, like Ryan was saying, they're a little bit smaller. And if you take them off the riser, they are perfect kit height. And I mean, there's people that made jokes that were like off the riser, putting it in front of their toilets.
Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah, so it's funny how that works on it, but the Infinity Table is what it's called, I believe, and they're putting the online feature in it, which, by the way, the X-Men cabinet and the Killer Instinct cabinet, all online. So for the people who have it, you don't have to have someone there with you. You can all team up and do your beat-em-ups and stuff together. But the Infinity Table, yeah, seeing the first set they're putting out, and I think they're coming out with like a, oh man, I hate to throw the numbers out there, but I think it's like a 19 inch and a 32 inch or something.
24 and 32.
There we go. And I think it looks really cool too. Microsoft had that Surface table or whatever at one point, and I hated that it didn't really get out there like that. So when I seen this, I was like, oh yeah, I mean, this is exactly what I wanted out of that anyway, was to sit around and play the games and silly stuff.
Yep. Yeah, I like this too, because the expandability, right? Working with other distributors and game companies, and then customizing your own game, right? Like, say you want to do D&D. What if you could just put on your map and set up your actual your game and good to go right there on the digital board?
That's what I was going to bring up is, I would love to have this with D&D, because I've seen people make their own tables like this online on like Inventables and play D&D using Roll20 on them. But you got to do this weird thing because you can't actually touch it, right? You still have to use your mouse. So if Arcade 1UP partnered with Roll20 or partnered with Wizards.
Yeah, Magic.
That would be amazing.
Magic, Pokemon, like all those cool card games. Munchkin.
Magic will never happen, but...
You don't think?
No, because they already have their own computer games for that.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, yeah.
So they've already got their market set for that. But yes, Roll20, D&D, that would be amazing.
Still cool, though, to have, like, the game mat, like a digital game mat to put up. I'm sure that's probably something you may be able to, you know, if they give you a little bit of an open-ended access, you may be able to create those and have, or a community-created mat.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I'm wondering. Yeah, I don't think that... It doesn't... Just from their page here, I didn't watch the video, but it doesn't seem like there's going to be any kind of community-created or, like... sideload your own thing, because it says when it lists all the features and an ever expanding selection of downloadable games and interactive content via the App Store. So, I mean, maybe Jim Bob could make an app and put it on there, or is it only going to be like partner content?
Yeah, that's to be seen. I think just the idea, though, that it's possible. Right. At a, I think they said it's retails like $500 or something too, for the one, I forget which size. So it's like, it's a pretty good deal too for that.
I do think it's a shame that maybe this isn't like as stylish as it should be, to like put in maybe a living room. And not particularly like a game room. Like, this could be like your living room coffee table, and then you could just load your games up on there. Because then different board games, like independent board games, they could make their games for this and put it out on it, and that's extra revenue for them. But I just don't think a lot of people are going to buy this, besides people that have a dedicated space for it, because it's too techy looking to be in anybody's like actual living room.
Unless you're like a college dorm or like college kid who's like, I don't care, I just want this. You know, it doesn't need to look like an actual piece of furniture.
Cause it basically looks like a TV with giant ass bezels stuck on some aluminum legs.
Yeah, and they're not like fold-in legs either, so you can't just be like, all right, I'm going to store this away, pop it. I mean, maybe they do pop out, but it doesn't look like it's a very quick like fold-in, you know, not convenient.
Yeah, but this is easy to mod, right? If you're going to do it, you could easily fit this thing inside of a wood cabinet or a table.
They also Photoshop out the AC cable that plugs into it. It is conspicuously not on the floor where it has all these people playing around it on the website. So you're going to have like an AC cable like going across your like floor to your plug or whatever.
That's a great point.
Yeah, yeah. So it is kind of dedicated to like a game room type area. Unless you have a plug in the middle of your living room, which some people do.
It would be neat too to see like where we get to. OLED's the one you can fold, right?
I don't think that it has to be OLED to be folding, but
well, it'd be cool to see us get to the point where we can just have a rollout OLED mat, and that's what you throw on your table for everybody to play instead of having a dedicated table.
Yeah, I think that's where things are going to go, is that like rollable mat where, you know, for the most part, it's this just in a much smaller, much more portable way so that it doesn't matter what table you're on. You just roll it out. There you go. You're ready to go.
Just like our e-ink newspapers, right?
Okay. I think this is much more feasible than a $1.50 a day ink newspaper.
I don't know. I think the market has to be big enough before that kind of technology can become like mass market and affordable, right?
Yes. Especially with the cost of those, like the OLEDs that you can actually roll like that are very expensive.
Right. And that, I think that would just be it. It would just have to get to the point where the technology was cheaper for sure.
Maybe if like foldable phones actually does become a thing, because right now there's a lot of issues with them. Maybe if that becomes a thing, then that'll help with the cost by making those at scale. And so larger foldable display or rollable displays or foldable displays will be affordable.
Yeah. I think it is interesting though, to see how much like this space though, the arcade space, the gaming stuff, even the board games, how much this is returning, even to see Magic and stuff like that actually kind of resurfacing. I noticed that even the Pokemon cards look like they're cycling even more. We went to Target after Christmas and it was like all that crap was gone. And I just wonder, maybe this is COVID. Maybe people are getting bored and they're starting to surface into like, hey, how can I entertain myself? But it, even before COVID, it seemed like a lot of this stuff was starting to like bubble up a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. I saw it for sure a little bit before COVID, just in people who never really talked about board games that I know, like all of a sudden were having board game nights or going back to like nostalgic things with their kids, and that kind of thing. And then card games, like all these younger kids now of my friends are playing Pokemon, and it's like how did that, you know, happen? This has been around that long, and that kind of thing. It's really neat how, like, you know, there's those times where it like pops back up and becomes popular again. But yeah, I think COVID for sure, especially puzzles. I think puzzles became a big thing during COVID. I know we did a bunch more puzzles because it was like something to do that you didn't have to go anywhere for.
So like, I secretly love puzzles, but I've just got this thing where like, I went on a vacation once and we're at the beach. Everything was fine. Like everybody's doing their stuff. And then one night as a party is like, hey, this is what we do for fun. It was, let's pull out the puzzle and work on the puzzle. I was like, what? What are we? We're at the beach and the puzzle's what? But I don't know. I've had like a weird thing ever since then on that with puzzles. But on the arcade one upside, it's interesting to see how much more they keep pulling out and what they can build. But I can tell you, I'm at the part where I shouldn't get any more. But I think that if they did do like an NFL Blitz, that would be so dope. that is the one last cabinet that I'm really hoping that they do.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah, I think it's exciting to see these things come back. I like seeing the nostalgic piece resurface. I like seeing these bars, you know, gather up all this old equipment and open it for people to come back and play. Because I want to take my kids to an arcade. I mean, they've been to like Dave and Buster's and stuff like that, but going back to the old ones, I think the old ones have just got a special space.
Yeah, I agree. It's, you know, obviously we all have rose-colored glasses when we look at our childhood, but I think you're right. There's something about an arcade that seems timeless, and it doesn't matter like how old you are. Like, you can get in there and have some fun.
Yeah, I mean, the new ones, that I thought that was actually a dying breed there for a while, and it's interesting to go to like Dave and Buster's. And Ryan, did you ever go see the Luigi's Mansion arcade machine?
Yeah, I think so. Because I went to Dave and Buster's right before the pandemic hit, and we played a Ghostbusters machine that was amazing.
I think it's similar to that, right? It has the balls. Doesn't the Luigi's one have the balls too?
But we did, yeah, we did play the Luigi's Mansion one too, I believe, and that was fun.
So the balls are just for Ghostbusters, okay? No, the Luigi's Mansion.
Well, that's gonna be the quote at the beginning of the show.
Absolutely,
right. The Luigi's Mansion one didn't have any of the balls. It was the vacuum cleaner simulation, and like you would pull up the coins and it actually simulated like you were sucking something up into a vacuum.
Yeah, we did play that one. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, those new ones are fun. Like the giant Space Invaders one is the one that is like my go-to if I go to Dave and Buster's or one of those types of new arcades, just because it's so huge and just so much fast motion, and it's one that like my daughter will actually sit there and play with me. Because it's just like, oh my goodness, look at these lights. It's so fast and fun.
I think the new Halo arcade, they have like a big four player you sit in. Everybody's got rail gun. You know, it's a rail shooter. Everyone plays together, but they all have their different classes and stuff. That was really cool. There's a new Star Wars arcade where you sit in it. It's a big projector with a curved screen. So like you're flying your ships, but it feels, and they got wind projection on you. It's pretty cool.
Is that like a new version of the like old school Star Wars one? Remember that, like the X-Wing?
Basically.
That's cool.
Yeah, not to like dive too deep on that stuff, but that is, it is, I'm just saying, it's, I think it's really neat that this stuff's happening.
Yeah, yeah, it's really cool.
I think we're out of time for this week, boys.
All right. I don't know what else to say, but say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.